Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
I know, we haven't been here in a while, but this is the Sports Time Radio podcast for April 29th. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since this Wednesday, the blogs have still been going up over there. I've been managing to do that even though I'm wonderfully sick, but they have been going up, so hopefully you've been keeping up with them. Of course, while you're over there at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is Sports Time Radio. Dan and I are also both out there still on Twitter. I'm at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan Z Man with threes.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, Dan and I have been gone for a while because, like I mentioned, I've been sick. I haven't been tested for the wonderful coronavirus yet, but apparently, as my doctor said, I have all the symptoms. So that's exciting to hear, and we'll try to be here as much as I can, depending on how I feel. But I felt good enough today to where I think I can get through an hour of talking to Dan because I haven't talked to him in a while. So. What have you what have you been doing sports wise to fill your time? Because I know you're not an NFL guy, but did you watch the draft at all?
Oh, I mean, me watching the NFL draft is even less exciting than me waiting for the one wall to finish drying while I paint the other one. So, I seen a couple of your posts. I actually prefer yours because you're not, okay, and please don't anyone take this the wrong way. The fandom, you got to love it. I'm not going to knock you for loving your team. You and I think because of this podcast and just in general, basically because of the podcast, we're a little bit more neutral, I guess you would say, but I mean, the reactions that some of my friends were posting about their teams, mostly the Bears, just kill me. You know, it just cracks me up. So I die laughing reading those. But I think the biggest one, of course, were all the memes for the Packers, and was it Jordan Love that was drafted by the Packers? So yeah. You know, that was funny, and I guess there were some tweets from Aaron Rodgers and what's his name? Brett Favre, good luck in Minnesota. I don't remember, make sure you update your penis pics. I don't know. I guess he was, that's what you got to love about Brett Favre. He's able to poke fun at, the crap he went through. So, other than that, it's I didn't really follow too much of it. I don't know. I think everyone gets way too hung up on it because you could have followed this kid his entire career through college, but I'm sorry. What you do in college to me isn't worth anything once you get to the NFL. You're at, let's just say you started at 5 years old. You're 20. So you've been in football 15 years. Your mom and dad shelled out a hell of cash, from the time you were able to go to, college camps, doing all this stuff. But to me, that means absolutely nothing because when you hit the NFL, your 15 years to me doesn't mean, for lack of a better word, crap. I won't even say the other word. Okay, you're at zero. You don't know anything. And sometimes I think that the guys that come in with all the accolades, the you know, guys like Jameis Winston and things like that, they think they're going to roll in and just pick up where they left off. And, I mean, that's just obviously not the case because Tom Brady's there. But, you know, that's not the case. You are now at zero. You have all your experience means dick. I can't think of any other, you know, better thing. It doesn't mean anything. Ask Johnny Manziel. Ask several Heisman Trophy winners, you know, that what did it mean when you got to the NFL? It meant nothing because you are now at zero. So for all my friends and family and, you know, acquaintances, anyone, you got to be excited for your team. You got to be mad for your team. You know, whatever they do, I'm not going to argue with you. But don't get all hung up on these draft picks. I think that's one of the problems is that they've been able to turn the draft into such a big thing that people get way too worked up on it. And it, you know, it really doesn't mean as much as you think it does. So, you know, that's kind of my take on it.
Well, you know, we've talked about it here before. Now, obviously, I did watch a lot more of it than you obviously did. And to be fair, I mean, it killed in the ratings. You know, the Thursday night, the first round swept all 3 hours. It was number one in all three time slots for the hours it was on. Friday night, it finished second in all three time slots. And one of the hours actually won the 18 to 49 demographic, which is the demographic that the advertisers go after. But, you know, in reality, we're not going to know if this is going to be a successful draft for 3 or 4 years down the line. I mean, some of the guys who got picked on Thursday, the first rounders, we'll get to see play and see if they make an immediate impact. But just adding Joe Burrow, who was the number one pick to the Bengals, isn't really going to make them a much better team. You know, it's going to be the pieces they add around them. And it's fun to watch. I enjoy it. But, you know, the thing that I think I even mentioned this in the blog today, the thing I always forget because the draft only comes once a year, I forgot how bad the Mickey Mouse Network's coverage of this thing is. You know, it's just a nightmare. You know, they want to tell you everything about every guy, and by the time they're done talking about one guy, two other picks are already been made, so now you're way behind. And you've got these picks just coming off the board, and they're not ready to talk about them. And it just drives me, you know, insane that they haven't figured out a better way to streamline it. You know, and then the other thing I got a kick out of that I think you probably would have too was, you know, everybody was complaining, oh my God, we're going to have so many technical difficulties and picks aren't going to get in. There was absolutely no problem with the teams getting their picks in. The only report I had is apparently, or I heard, was the Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay apparently had a little bit of an internet problem while they were doing their thing, but obviously he had a cell phone and there's other ways to work with this. The people who had the biggest problem was the Mickey Mouse Network themselves, because they would come back from making a pick and they weren't on time. There was too big of a delay before the studio guy would start talking. And then when he would throw it to another guy, you know, obviously everybody was in their home. There was a gigantic delay with the Mickey Mouse Network that nobody else seemed to have. And it was the strangest thing, and it just created so much dead air space that while there was obviously no problem with the teams or anything like that, it was the network themselves, and they really did a poor, poor job of being ready to handle this, and you'd think they would have been on top of it. I mean, you've known for how long this is how it was going to go. So, you know, and then, of course, the funniest moment, I'm sure you've probably seen the meme for this already. You know, it's all over the place. But, you know, the New England Patriots made their first pick. I believe it was in the second round. I believe they traded, or no, I think they did have a first round pick. I'm trying to remember if they traded out. I don't remember off the top of my head. But, you know, they made their pick, and again, the network was so far behind that, you know, by the time they had made the pick, there were two other picks up. So Bill Belichick, who is their, obviously, the Patriots head coach, we all know that, he had gotten out of his chair and walked away from his table where the draft was, and his dog jumped up in the chair and literally was sitting at the computer looking like he was running the Patriots draft. Dan, it was the funniest thing.
Oh, man. I am sad I missed that.
Yeah. I mean, that in reality, that was the best part about the whole draft. That was just hilarious because, I mean, literally the dog was just sitting there looking at the computer screen and you're like, wait, is the dog running the draft? How's this working out? I mean, this is fantastic. So that was the best part. And then I guess the other thing that surprised me, and maybe this is just because I'm old. I was really shocked by the number of draft picks who apparently already have children. Because there were a lot of, like, babies and smaller children and stuff associated with these draft picks. Now, obviously, it's possible that it may not be theirs. It could belong to a relative who happened to be there or somebody like that. But, yeah, it seemed like a lot of these guys who were picked, especially early in the draft, already had kids. And I just kind of found that, I don't know, maybe it was just me that I found that kind of odd because, you know, they're – you know what, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids themselves. But I guess that's just how it goes, and I guess I'm just old.
Well, number one, they shouldn't be other relatives' kids unless they all live in the same house due to our social distancing, social.
Oh, well, that one was also in a hurry with the draft. There were so many people at these guys' houses, it wasn't funny.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though. So, you know, with that alone, but I'm not going to knock anybody. But again, you know, we've heard these stories, and sometimes these guys become fathers, you know, because, you know, they don't understand how mating, you know, works. No. how do you put this? Without knocking the women so bad either. You know, it goes both ways, but sometimes these guys become targets, especially the stars.
Oh,
you know. So, you know, you can kind of see where I'm going with that one.
Yeah, no, you know, like I said, it just seemed, it was really just kind of, you know, odd to me when I was kind of looking back at it, and it's like, oh, you know, because I was, you know, at that age, I wasn't even thinking about, you know, being somebody's father or anything like that. You know, obviously, I mean, you know, luckily for this kid, the guy got drafted, and especially the first rounders, you know, they're going to get, you know, really good money. So, I mean, it should hopefully work out for the child, and, you know, they'll be well taken care of. But, yeah, it just was just kind of one of those oddities that I noticed, you know. But, yeah, you humorously mentioned the social distancing thing. Yeah, it was funny because, you know, they would cut to certain people's houses. And I know the NFL actually asked the players to limit it to 6 people. But, you know, they would cut to places and there'd be 10 or 15 people standing in the room behind the, you know, the guy getting picked and all that stuff. And it was just kind of like, oh, boy, here we go. You know, just one of those things that I guess you can overlook because, you know, they're being drafted and it's a once in a lifetime experience, right?
Yeah. The one thing that, you know me, I love my fitted hats. So, you know, I'm in a couple Facebook groups for literally just for hat collectors. You think I'm bad? You know, there's a guy that we all in the groups know that have about 3,000 hats. So, you know, even I'm sitting there going, what the hell do you mean with all the bids? But, you know, I guess one of the things on that end of it, my aspect of it, I guess you could say, which was pretty cool for these draftees, was I guess they were all shipped and I don't know if they were fitted hats or, you know, the snapbacks, but they were shipped every single hat. So you got every team's hat, you know, which I thought, obviously, I don't think it's in any way, I'm not going to say fixed, but I don't think they really let, you know, each team, I think that's, it's true. Yeah, I don't think the NFL draft is anything like the NBA draft, you know, where, I don't even know how to put that, but I mean, let's be honest, NBA draft, they could just throw it out the window because it means jack to anybody because it's already predetermined. Everyone knows who's going to get picked where and how. Ooh, there might be a surprise here and there. A guy might go 2 and 3, you know, but other than that, we all know exactly how the draft's going to go. So, but I thought that was a pretty cool thing. But, you know, unfortunately, I bet those young men, they probably just tossed the rest of the hats to their friends and family because, you know, once you're
with them. Yeah, absolutely. The relatives ended up with them, whoever was there. I do wonder if they sent Joe Burrow after the hat because it was pretty concise that he was going number one to the Bengals.
Now, is, you know, kind of sticking with the draft, is that the kid who has the 3% hair tattoo? I was a stupid kid. I'm getting it removed.
No, that was oddly the Patriots again. They drafted a kicker, and I know his first name is Jason, and I'm not even sure if I could get anywhere close to his last name, but it's R-O-W something or other. I'll see if I can bing it here real quick while we're doing this. But yeah, he mentioned that.
No, Justin War. I can't even say his last name. War Research.
Justin Rowasher, Rowasser, and yeah, apparently he had the tattoo for a while before it became like a symbol for the militia or whatever it turned out to be. But he did say that he is getting it covered up. You know, he's going to get it turned into something else. But yeah, it's just odd that he ended up going to New England.
Well, you know, and here's the, you know, and here's where I guess it kind of gets tricky too, is, there's two different versions, I guess you could say.
Oh, is there?
You know, because there's, you know, the far right military group. And I was trying to get the kid's tattoo back up. You know, I think what, you know, his problem is he's missing the 1776 because there's the 3percenters.org and flat out on the top. Sorry, thinks I'm talking to her. We are not a militia.
Oh.
So, you know, so there's that group and then there's this other group, you know, they're both using the same symbol. So I think that's where the problem comes in. But, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know. He did what he did, but I guess especially going to Boston and the history they have, you kind of want to get rid of that.
Yeah, you know, and again, he didn't do it with any malice. You know, like I said, this was something that he actually did well before it kind of became this group symbol. So, we'll see how people react to it and stuff. But yeah, it's just something to talk about.
He said he got it when he was 18. You know, what he understood was 3% were described as a percentage of colonists that rose up against the authoritarian government of British. You know, so he kind of thought it was a patriotic, go figure, patriot, kind of thing. and he's from a military family, so he thought it, you know, kind of represented them, which essentially that's where the group did start off as. That's what their intention was. And but, you know, of course, like any other thing, there's your extremists. So, you know, I mean, take it how you want it, but I think, you know, for him, being in the eye like he is, he's got to remove it or cover it. I'd be a, you know, I'd just be funny and just put big band-aids on it every week. No offense, but I mean, he's a kicker. You know, it's not like he's going to be spending a whole lot of time getting his ass kicked and knocked around. So.
Yeah, apparently he's already made plans to turn it into something else. So
yeah.
they worked on whatever, you know, the issue was, because obviously, you know, they were, you know, if he didn't, you know, the media would have immediately, you know, just continued to, you know, just continue to beat it to death. So it was, you know, decent that he got out in front of it.
You know, it's just, you're not allowed to have an opinion or affiliation if it's not the popular one these days. So,
yeah.
You know, that's right. I think it's kind of sad.
You know, that's just kind of how it goes. But, you know, and I did find, you know, some humor here. You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk about the Bears always on the local radio here, because Dan and I live in the Chicago area. And I thought it was interesting when they drafted the tight end out of Notre Dame that the guy became like the 10th tight end on the roster. Now, I believe they did cut one or two of them, so they're down a few. But I thought it was humorous that the Bears just have like this multitude of tight ends on their roster right now, actually worse than kickers from last year when, you know, they brought in like 5 or 6 kickers to compete for the job. So I don't know if or how this became a need at draft time, or if he was just the best player on the board. But I got some enjoyment out of listening to some of the local guys talk about the fact that, you know, the Bears have kind of cornered the markets on tight ends. So that was humorous.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that, because draft 25
you know, this is,
tight ends.
This is disappointing that you don't have Uncle Bob to talk to now, because you know he'd have had an opinion. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'd have to actually call him for that one right now. Cause, you know. Well, unless we wait till Friday and then meet in Indiana, then, you know, I could give him a good haircut there. But
yeah. So, yeah. Well, then, so since you obviously, you know, you didn't watch the draft, have you been watching The Last Dance? Are you into that at all?
I don't even know what that is.
That's the 10-part series the Mickey Mouse Network is doing on Michael Jordan.
Oh, you know, I didn't even realize it was a 10-part series, but I don't know. I really don't care. You know, I read the updates. Ooh, Michael Jordan still doesn't like Isaiah Thomas. I don't really care. You know.
Yeah, you know, like I watched the first part, you know, the first one, and I have the other three on my DVR, but I, you know, it almost seems like I don't need this because I remember it. You know, and I'm just kind of not to the point where I need to hear the story again right now. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, I mean, you know, I'm not going to knock ESPN for doing this because, I mean, what better time to release something like this?
Right.
You know, they're basically turning every Monday into Michael Jordan Day, so.
And, you know, like the first one was done really well, and from what I've heard, the other three are very good. So, you know, I mean, if you're interested, it apparently is worth watching. And, like, I didn't dislike the first one, but, you know, like, it's a lot like you said. I kind of already realized that Michael Jordan doesn't like Isaiah Thomas. I didn't need, you know, a documentary to tell me that. So
yeah.
I'm kind of like, oh, okay.
Well, and I think with the Netflix era, you know, it's just, I've got to wait every week. So I'll just, you know, eventually it'll get pulled onto, well, you know, it's the mothership. So I don't know if maybe it'll end up eventually on Disney Plus. That's probably where I'll watch it. Oh, yeah, you know, that's the other side of it, Big Jack. I don't have ESPN, so that's the other reason I don't watch it.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I figured I would keep them all in case I just kind of get to the point where I want to, you know, I need something to watch, you know, since I'm going to be kind of locked up for a while, you know, just to kind of see. But, yeah, I just, like I said, I wasn't at the point where I kind of needed the reminder. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'll keep it around. But I know, you know, Schomburg Stu is watching it, and I know he's enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, you know, that might be something I look into eventually. But currently it's not on my list. My list, which I've fallen off on, I've got to check my DVR. Is The Dark Side of the Ring. You know, we had slowly discussed this prior to your falling ill, and I got all the way to Jimmy. Or did I see Jimmy Snuka? Yeah, I watched Snuka's. So, you know, it's been interesting. I think, you know, for me, the Jimmy one was pretty big because, you know, I didn't find out about the whole girlfriend. I didn't even know he was married, to be honest with you. But, you know, the whole girlfriend murder. Do we call it a murder? What do we call it? You know, the whole girlfriend thing. I didn't really know about all that at the time when I met him, and actually. You know, unlike a lot of indie wrestlers who, especially today, take a picture with a guy and then they're like, oh, guess who I hung out with? And all they did was shake his hand and, you know, verbally jerk him off while, you know, oh, yeah, I remember this. No, I actually got to, my cousin and I actually got to hang out with Jimmy. And, you know, the way some of the other wrestlers talked about him, I'm like, that's exactly who I met, was the nicest guy. You know, I had nothing but great things to say about him. So it, you know, when that whole situation, when I did find out about it, because obviously that happened when I was a kid, a baby pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't brought into light until 30 years passed because someone down there in, you know, Pennsylvania was doing a follow-up on her story. So that one, you know, was a little bit more interesting to me. And like I said, I fell off. So, you know, I've got the Benoit extended cut part two, David Schultz. I don't remember him. And then I didn't realize that Dino Bravo was assassinated.
Yeah. I remember that one. So yeah, I'm all caught up. What I realized is I have the David Schultz one on, 'cause I remember that clearly. That was really the first time that the business got exposed to the national media, and he slapped the reporter from 2020.
Oh, that's that one.
Yeah, that's who David Schultz was. So that I'm kind of interested in seeing that one. You know, so far they've all been pretty good, with the exception of the Brawl for All one. I didn't enjoy very much. It was just kind of blah. So
yeah, and you know what's super hilarious about that one is I don't think I have that anymore. But I actually had that paper because that's the I'm sorry, I don't know how the hell you talk about that. Or wait, no, was the Brawl for All, was that the pay per view? You know, the way they narrated it, I didn't understand. Was it a pay per view? or was it a extended kind of, you know, over a series of nights? Or because I, you know, my understanding was that was the pay per view where main evented with Undertaker and Mankind, and you know, now I can't even think of his name, but Mankind getting thrown off the cage.
It was a weekly deal that they used to show on Raw. There would be a match or two on Raw every week.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know you went by winning it, you got the opportunity to fight Butterbean, which obviously was a fiasco. If you just watch the, you know, if you haven't watched it yet, check that out, and that'll explain everything. You know, totally. But yeah, a lot of it was done. You know, like Bart Gunn, who was interviewed in it quite a bit, he mentions that basically the tournament was put together to get Dr. Death Steve Williams over.
Yeah.
You know, this was his first time in WWE. I think they were still F at the time. You know, this was his first time he had been there. He had been an international star and a star every place else in the world except for WWF. So they finally brought him in. He was a little past his prime, but he had been a legitimate tough guy in the business for years. And they figured he would just mow through the tournament. You know, he was a All-American wrestler at the University of Oklahoma. You know, so this was something he should have easily won. But again, they didn't check the background of any of these guys. So they didn't know the kind of experience that, like, you know, a Bart Gunn or the Godfather or these, you know, these other guys had had when it comes to, you know, just the fight game itself. And sure enough, you know, Bart Gunn ends up catching Williams and dropping him. And not only does he knock him out, the guy tore his quad or his hamstring or something and basically ended his WWF career before it even got started because he, you know, his rehab lasted, I think, over a year. And they didn't do much with him after he came back.
Yeah, you know, because I really got back into wrestling after, like, the Brawl for All and all that. And, I mean, when, you know, my cousin would talk about Dr. Death, I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, if you go and you find, you know, I'm sure you can still find some of his Japan stuff. You know, I mean, he was it for, you know, the longest time over there. You know, and that was always the weird thing in wrestling back then is guys like that used to leave. You know, you would lose the Dr. Deaths or the Bruiser Brodies or, you know, the earliest guy was Stan Hansen. You know, these guys would go away to Japan for 6-8 months or longer, make a boatload of money, and then come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't stay with a, you know, a WWE or a WCW for years at a time because, you know, it was the territory days, and you could go from one territory to another. And, you know, these guys would just make so much money in Japan that they would, you know, they would just stay there.
Mainstream wrestling has turned into the indie scene, or almost territory, kind of.
Well, you know, humorously now, if you're hugely over in Japan, it doesn't mean as much here as it used to. You know, I mean, there's a couple guys, you know, that have came back that have done well, you know, the AJ Styles, the Kenny Omegas, but the one tag team that WWE just released that Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows were huge in Japan, but yet they came back over here and, you know, you wonder, you know, and I mean, there's always, as you and I know, there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, it's the way the guys are booked. You know, the stuff like that, the way it's kind of handled to see how they're going to do. But, I mean, WWE really dropped the ball with them and didn't do anything to kind of keep that Japanese momentum going. So I'm guessing it's one of those things where, you know, Vince McMahon looks at it like it doesn't matter what happens in Japan because it doesn't count.
Yeah, and you know, and that's where some of the, you know, in my view is, you know, it's just like at least the Super Bowl doesn't have the word world in it, but you know, the World Series, it's not a World Series. It's the United States Series. You know, WWF worldwide. No, you eventually travel worldwide, but you don't incorporate world.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, they do travel the world when they can. I mean, they wrestle all over the world. They just don't include, you know, the people who wrestle in these spots when they're there. It's still, you know, their own people. I mean, we won't see the days where, you know, the giant Baba who I own, I can't remember if he owned New Japan or All Japan, but, you know, he would wrestle on WWE cards. You know, just to add that, you know, international flair, you know, those kind of things are, you know, that's in the past now. So.
Yeah. The one that I think, I don't want to say affected me the most, but, you know, hit me a little bit more, just because I didn't really know the full story, was Bruiser and Brody. I thought, you know, obviously Chris Benoit's situation, you know, it's a screwed up one, and you know, there's nothing more you can say about it. It's screwed up, you know. But you know, the Bruiser Brody, I think it really hits you, because here's a guy who really lived the business. You know, especially during that time, you know, he fell in line with it, and to just be murdered by some jealous jackass, you know, and the guy to just get off like nothing, and then to see the interview with his son, you know, I think his obviously his wife gives you an effect, but that kid, that grown man, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine. And it's one thing to lose your father, but to have him murdered because he, you know, someone was jealous.
Yeah, you know, the weird part with that is what I was surprised they left out that was kind of well reported was, you know, anybody who witnessed the crime, from what I had always heard about that, you know, and obviously the guys who, the only guys who really witnessed it, I know Tony Atlas was the main witness, and there were a couple other guys who saw what went on, but they were all American, and they were basically told that if they came back to the island to testify that they would never leave. So, you know, that's why a lot of this went nowhere, because you couldn't get anybody to testify against the guy.
Well, I think Atlas actually said that. Was it Atlas or who was the other guy? Was there another one?
Yeah, there was Dutch Mantel.
I can't remember, you know, but, you know, he said that they were told they would have their day in court, and then they were never subpoenaed or told of the court day.
So, yeah, and, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, in these other places, you know, we don't know how the justice system actually works. But, yeah, you know, so, yeah, I mean, all in all, they've been pretty good. I'm interested to see how they handle this David Schultz one, because I'm very much under the impression that Vince McMahon is not going to be on it. And, obviously, he was the owner of WWF at the time. But I don't feel that he'll be he would be forthcoming enough to do one of the. So,
you know what I do like, though, is the fact that I believe it was a Cornette who came out, which, let's be honest, I worked for a company that booked him. I don't know if I was there at the time. I don't think I was there. But just watching him on TV, I don't know who's the bigger jackass, him or Vince Russo.
Yeah, I've worked shows with Cornette where he was, you know, he was fine to work with. I mean, I didn't work anybody he managed, so I didn't have any real interaction with him except, you know, hello, goodbye, how are you type of things. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, he's an old school guy, you know, believes in, you know, protecting the business and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, even to this day, he's still like that.
Yeah, he just seems like one of those guys that if you don't agree with him, which is pretty much what I got out of Vince Russo, is if you don't agree with him, then that's it. There's no conversation. There's no compromise. It's his way or nothing.
Yeah, and to be fair, Russo himself is a gigantic tool bag. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. So,
yeah, it always amazed me, and I'm like, how did this guy get in there? But, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, I don't know. I think if I was, you know, at a show and we were all hanging out, I think I'd probably end up hanging out with Vince Russo.
time to change the subject here, Dan, because I need to know if you can answer me. I'm guessing you probably can't, but I'm interested
to
know.
I don't talk about it.
Apparently, the Chinese Professional Baseball League is underway.
Yes.
You know, a couple of the teams have played 10 games, a couple of teams have played 11 games. The Rakuten Monkeys right now are 8-2, and they are in control of the league here. There's only four teams in this league: the Rakuten Monkeys, the Uni President 7-Eleven Lions, the China Trust Brothers, and the FUBU Guardians, or FUBAN Guardians, depending on how you pronounce it. Do you know if they're playing in front of people? Because I was looking at it and trying to find it, and I couldn't figure it out.
That one I couldn't find. I can I'll try to figure that out tomorrow. I know a couple guys in some of the groups that that might know, but you know, it surprised me that with the current pandemic that they're even kind of going through with it.
Yeah, because you know, like I looked at you know some of the stuff, and like they don't have. At least not that I could see. They don't have any foreign-born players. It looks like it's all Chinese players. You know, I was going over the names and some of the stuff that was going on there. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, they've been playing for a little bit of time if they've got 10 and 11 games in. You know, and I know I did see the Korean baseball, I think it's organization is what they call it there. They're apparently preparing to start on May 12th, but yeah, and you know, like now here it says that they're actually playing their preseason games in empty stadiums.
Yeah, that's not a big deal.
Yeah, so you know, yeah, I mean it's just preseason. That's no big deal. They haven't said yet, you know, when the season does open, if they're planning on allowing fans, then I mean they have a couple weeks before we, you know, they need to make that decision because, like I said, I believe it starts May 12th. I believe it's the opening day. So,
see, and here I thought you were going to go with the. The proposed MLB 3-division BS.
Yeah, I was trying to get to that, but I figured I would go where they were actually playing right now.
Yeah.
Before I got into trying to figure out what they're going to attempt to do here. I know I didn't look too much into it, but all I heard is like you know, it's going to, like, one of the divisions will be Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Tigers, Twins, or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically, I mean, as much as you want to do that, it still doesn't work. It still doesn't cut down, you know, it stops the Cubs and the Sox going out west. BFD, I mean, the Mariners need to go down to Houston. How is that any different? You know, it doesn't. The proposal is just flat out stupid. There's no other thing about it. And I mean, if that's the route they're going to go, then they need to refund me my money because I'm not watching this crap this year. They need to make a decision. You know, quit coming up with these stupid ideas that make no sense whatsoever. I mean, because you want to go that route, that's fine. But you literally taking away the value of having the divisions to begin with. the separation between American League and National League, and then the DH. What you're taking away everything, and you know, I'm not trying to be one of these get off my lawn type things, but baseball can't make a decision. The commissioner's office can't make a decision on actually doing something about the fact that the 17 and 18 World Series champion cheated to win. Nothing has been done. Oh, they suspended the coaches and blah, blah, blah. Can't ever. Oh, BFD. The team still houses the trophy at their stadium. The team still have all that in their record. The league still has that in the record book. If you cannot even simply put an asterisk next to it and let everyone know that these teams didn't deserve the championship because they cheated, then, you know, what's the point? It's no different than just scrambling all the teams together and then just throwing up and going. I mean, at this point, you might as well just pick the Yankees and the Dodgers to go to the World Series. The two top teams. You might as well just forego an entire season and then pick the six most popular teams and conduct the postseason that way. I don't know. To me, it's just dumb. And then the fact that they're trying to get a league together and have three divisions only and have these three divisions play 100 games between June and God knows when it's going to end. Man, I'm sorry, but you have all of these intelligent people that run this organization whose heads are so far up their asses, you know, that they can't even see their own tongue. You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing? Like, sitting around a boardroom and throwing these ideas out there is one thing, but to actually publicize this idiocracy is just so stupid. I mean, come on. You talk about the integrity of the game.
Remember, they did say only about 1% of the ideas come out. So you do have to wonder what some of these other ideas are. So, you know, I think, you know, if they could do this right, it could be interesting with the, you know, 10 teams in each division, you know, just depending on how they, you know, how they set things up and what they're, you know, what they're going to do with it. You know, I mean, because I would actually like the idea of the World Series winners not, or the World Series got participants not playing each other until the World Series. You know, yeah. I always enjoyed that. Now there's just, you know, too much interleague. But, you know, looking at the thing, you know, looking at like the article on it here, the only thing they're really saying is it's 100 to 110 game season. But, like, there's no listing of how many teams get in the playoffs, how many, you know, how many players on a roster, you know, what are we doing for that? So, I'm going to need to know a little bit more about it before I can make any kind of decision.
Yeah, and, you know, let's just go 110. Oops.
And they're saying 18 to 21 days of spring training before they would start.
Yeah. Do you see where I don't understand? Like, get your head out of your ass already. So 18 to 21 days, you haven't even set when you're going to start this magical spring training. I mean, Friday's May 1st. Your plan has to have been in action already. And these guys should already be headed. I mean, forget that you're also asking in this situation these guys to just uproot and, you know, leave their families at home for the next, you know. And then what happens if one of them goes to help their neighbor with groceries and now the one whole team has COVID?
obviously there's, you know, like I said, there's a lot more. that needs to come out before I'm going to have any idea of if this is good or bad. You know, right now it just looks like somebody tossed out a half-baked idea. The media picked up on it, and here's what you got.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, give me a little more detail here. Let me know what's actually going on before you, it's like you're trying to sell me the sandwich before you put any meat on the bread.
Mm-hmm.
That was a fat guy analogy, by the way, just so you knew. But I give them credit for at least trying to come up with ideas. I haven't heard much from the NBA or the NHL. I mean, the last thing I heard from the NHL was that they actually want to try to finish the regular season now that some of these states are going to be slowly opening back up come, Friday.
Well, I mean, with that, the way it is, they might as well just go play the rest of the season in Georgia or one of those Carolinas.
Yeah, I get the idea that it's a money business. I mean, you and I both understand that, and they want that television money.
Mm-hmm.
This is in reality what this is a grab for right now. The leagues are looking for that TV money. That's the only reason the NHL or the NBA has any interest whatsoever in playing games. Don't think it's about the fans. They're going to try to sell you on that. And, that's part of the baseball reason, too. They're already looking at losing, 50-plus games of TV money. So, not to mention ticket sales and everything else that go into it. That's all they're trying to recoup here. They're just trying to recoup some money.
Well, yeah, because they're going to be having, especially Major League Baseball, going to be having to shell out a lot of money. I'm not going to complain about my, 20, 30 bucks that I spent for $2 $5 tickets. The state of Illinois just finds any way to take everything from you. At this point, I'm like, whatever, give me a comp for next year. I don't need my money back. And if you don't want to give me my money back, then donate it to some organization. I'd be cool with that, but granted, granted, I'm not a season ticket holder. I'm not the pink hat guy for the Cubs who spends, I forget what his seats are worth, but, my old boss was telling me about the season. He's a millionaire himself. He was telling me about the 1800s club or whatever that, that you and I will never see except for in pictures. I think he said it was $1 million a ticket, and he actually had a guy that he, a friend of his, I think they met, I don't know how they know each other. This guy that he knows from Texas, this is an old guy whose father was in the oil industry, who this guy owns season tickets and actually, splits them with a big time drug dealer from Florida. Because the drug dealer doesn't, he pays cash to the guy who buys the tickets. So, that's how it works. So,
that's how you clean up the money.
Exactly. They give it to a legitimate businessman who's actually not even a legitimate businessman. He was handed something by his daddy. that's how it works. So, it's interesting, but, like for the Cubs, what do the Ricketts plan on doing? If the season gets canceled, but even that, what, 82 games, $1 million? And maybe I'm off. Maybe I don't think it was $1 million a game, but I think it was for the year. So, what do the Ricketts have to do when they're shelling out 500 grand here and there? And maybe they won't be shelling out the cash and, next year's season ticket. Here's the other thing. Are they going to continue with their, annual 3%, 5% rate? Are ticket prices all going to increase? How much more do you want to deter your fans?
Yeah, well, you know, I know there were four teams, the Giants, the Padres, the Cardinals, and the Red Sox, who announced refund policies for, it says here, for games not played through May. They don't say how they're going to offer it. The two teams that do here, the Minnesota Twins will credit season ticket holders for missed games, plus give an additional 15% credit of that amount to be used for 2020 or 2021. The Indians said fans who had tickets for home games this March and April could receive a 10% bonus credit for a game later in the 2020 or 2021 season. And it does say here the Red Sox could extend a similar bonus credit to their season ticket holders. So that's what some of the teams are doing. Like I said, not all, but some.
Yeah, well, that's because they're relying on the commissioner and these jackasses to come up with a plan to still be able to, you know, get in 60 games in their home stadium, so they only have to worry about 20-some games.
I can't believe I forgot to ask you about this. Since we're short on time, buddy, I really need to know what you think here. I was crushed, man. I couldn't believe it when I heard the news. Butler and Christian Cavallari getting divorced. Where are you at?
I think it's sad. But you know, here's my theory on this, Big Jack, and I don't know if Jay Cutler knew about this when he was getting into it, but I feel like anybody who comes out of Hollywood, I don't believe in their marriages. You know, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, Tom Hanks is still with his wife. There are some that are still together, but I honestly believe that their marriage is nothing more than a contract, and it has a term.
Yeah, and I'm under the impression that it ends her reality show, because in reality of that, he was the star.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and you've got to wonder, for Jay Cutler, when this is all over with, I don't know. He's kind of a hard guy to judge, I think, because he's so standoffish. But, you know, for him, if he's not, you know, married, he's not tied down anymore. He doesn't have, you know, obligations for this TV show, which I'm sure, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to speak on Jay's behalf. But I think there was a significant amount of money involved in that show, and it might have paid more than what Fox was offering. But I've got to imagine this guy, within the next 2 years, is back in the NFL and we start seeing him. Cause I think he'd be, I think he'd be good to be an analyst. I don't know if he'd,
yes, I believe it was, but he decided to go back to the Dolphins when they offered him $10 million.
Yeah.
So,
it was CBS. It wasn't Fox.
I don't remember which. I think it was CBS, but I'm not sure. Okay, all right. If you do something,